Hey friends, I want to thank you very much for tuning in to the SGT Report podcast. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. So stocks are at all-time highs, the housing market is on fire, interest rates are at zero, and this government just printed another $5 trillion. What could possibly go wrong? Meanwhile, consumer confidence hit a 10-year low, and inflation hit 6.8% officially, with many informed analysts saying it's much closer to 9%. So something's not adding up, is it? What can you do? You can play it safe. Putting some of your assets into precious metals will keep your money away from the volatility of markets and inflation and let you sleep at night. This month, Noble Gold is giving away a free 1/10 ounce solid gold American Eagle coin with any qualifying plan you start. So talk to an expert at Noble Gold and they'll run you through the options to keep your money safe. No pressure, no hassling, no call centers, just a chance to speak to someone who knows what they're talking about. How refreshing would that be? You can start by calling 877-646-5347 or visit their website at noblegoldinvestments.com. This is a building. This is nanothermite. This is a building on nanothermite.
Any questions?
Hey guys, Sean from SGT Report here. You're going to really enjoy this interview. I've got some powerful, powerful information to convey and share. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. Bitcoin was up nearly 20% in just the past 5 days. And yes, it's a very volatile space, but people are making a lot of money. And I want you to know there's a way your capital gains can go tax-free legally, and you can do it through My Digital Money. With My Digital Money, you can buy and sell cryptocurrencies through a crypto IRA and not pay any taxes. And we all know how big the gains could be. Last year, Ethereum gained 450%. With a My Digital Money crypto IRA account, you don't have to pay taxes on any of that. And here's the best part. My Digital Money is giving away $50 to new cash accounts. Just use the code MDM50. Go to mydigitalmoney.com and open your account now to get your free $50. Mydigitalmoney.com. Hey friends, welcome back. Thank you so very much for tuning in. It's Sean from SGT Report here with an extremely important update for those of you who care about God and country, transparency and accountability. Well, those are the two key terms, aren't they? Friends, we are hitting a tipping point. I've been saying it for quite a while, and if you still don't believe me, here's yet another example. 2/3 of Democrats want Hillary's spying and the fake Russia charges investigated, according to a new poll. And get this, this same poll also found that 68% of those same Democrats want to see more scrutiny of the Biden's business activities, including crack smoke and Hunter Biden's involvement with his father's administration. You can't make this up, friends. There is a tipping point globally at hand as humanity wakes up. Well, what else does humanity need to wake up to? The same thing that woke me up so many years ago. Building 7, 9/11. What really happened and who was behind it? We've got a very important update today to share with my guest, Mick Harrison. He is the litigation director of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. He's a freedom fighter, a truth teller, and we're very happy to have him here right now. Mick, welcome back.
Thank you, Sean. It's good to be back. And I wanted to give you an update with your permission on some of our litigation for the Lawyers Committee on the 9/11 issue. The hottest case at the moment that we're doing, hottest meaning most active, is a Freedom of Information Act case. I'm litigating this for David Cole, and many of your listeners may know of David Cole. David is a longtime activist and researcher on the 9/11 issue, has been doing a lot of good Freedom of Information Act work on 9/11 for, I don't know, two decades now. And one of his cases has come to an interesting point. We're now in active litigation in federal court in Washington, D.C., and we've achieved something procedurally that seldom happens in any FOIA case, FOIA meaning Freedom of Information Act, and to my knowledge, has not happened ever in a 9/11 case, and that is we've been granted permission by the court to do some discovery, which means we can use the power of the court to do document requests, interrogatories, some depositions, to gather more evidence regarding the extent to which two federal agencies, those being FEMA and NIST, did or did not comply with the federal statute governing freedom of information. Most of you probably know by now that FEMA is the Federal Emergency Management Agency. NIST, N-I-S-T, is National Institute for Standards and Technology. The reason those two agencies are involved in this litigation is that David, way back now in 2011, submitted a FOIA request, as any citizen can do, requesting government agency records. And he wanted to know, he wanted to see all the records that had data used for or in the building performance study, we call it the BPS for short, that FEMA did about the World Trade Center buildings, that three of which collapsed on 9/11 completely. Others were damaged. And some of your listeners may not know that FEMA did a lengthy study regarding the Trade Center buildings and some nearby buildings and how they performed under the stresses in quotation marks, of 9/11. And that study came out before the later study by NIST. A lot of folks know more about the NIST study. It's been more of a public controversy, particularly on Building 7. And as some of you know, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth is suing NIST right now in a separate lawsuit in federal court in D.C. regarding the failure to correct its World Trade Center 7 study. And if we have time, we'll talk about that later. But
well, Mick, if I may, let me just interrupt and let's set the stage for people who may not know what we're talking about. Now, the majority of my audience does, but some folks, we've got to realize this is 20 years ago now. A generation has gone by since they brought down buildings 1, 2, and 7. So I want to show people exactly what we're talking about, because you've mentioned here FEMA and NIST. Now, FEMA was running a drill in New York City a day or two before and on the day of 9/11 over on Pier B or whatever it was. And NIST was tasked with explaining why Building 7 collapsed at freefall speed at around 5:20 p.m. in the afternoon after Jane Stanley and the BBC falsely claimed that building had already collapsed. And it took NIST many, many, many years to come up with an explanation for the collapse of Building 7. Let's just show people what we're talking about, because this all reminds me of the 1980s Partnership for a Drug-Free America spot about drugs. This is your brain, and this is your brain on drugs. Check this out, and then we're going to show people World Trade Center 7.
Is there anyone out there who still isn't clear about what doing drugs does? Okay, last time. This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
All right, youngsters, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, this is a building. This is nanothermite. This is a building on nanothermite.
Any questions?
I'll pause it there. Friends, I'm showing this to you from the University of Alaska Fairbanks website. And the University of Alaska Fairbanks has debunked the NIST explanation of the collapse of that building, because NIST excluded the possibility of explosives being used in the demolition of World Trade Center 7. So I just wanted to set the stage there for folks who have no idea what we're talking about, Mick. So you're taking on FEMA, or I should say David Cole is taking on FEMA and NIST, and it's all about freedom of information. What documents do you expect to get? What documents have you gotten? And bring us up to speed. Sorry to have interrupted.
No problem. It's always disturbing to watch that Building 7 collapse, as you've shown it, and it raises so many questions. It's one of those pictures worth a thousand words things. So what's happening with the lawsuit that I'm doing for David Cole, and by the way, the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry is supporting this lawsuit by David Cole and supporting me in litigating it for him. So it's a joint effort. The short version is, in 2011, David asked for all these records that FEMA collected to do its lengthy study on the building collapses that FEMA did. And the first thing they told them, which is about as shocking as the video you just showed, was that they had no records to give them. And you have to let that sink in for a minute. They did this detailed, lengthy, published study of the building collapses and damage to other buildings. And then they claimed today that they had not a single record of data used in their study that they could give them. So we pressed, obviously, David pressed and I pressed on this. It was not an acceptable answer. They eventually, NIST, pardon me, FEMA eventually explained that the reason they said that was that they claimed to have given all of their records regarding their building performance study to NIST, a separate federal agency, and it kept absolutely nothing. And this is in the electronic age, of course, where it's impossible to basically to keep absolutely nothing unless you intentionally destroy it. So a lot of the records would have been electronic. So we didn't accept that answer either, because they would have emails, they would have backup hard drives, and any number of records they would not have turned over to NIST. Eventually, but only after stalling David for 3 to 4 years, we sued them. And within three to four months after we sued them, we did get about 3,700 pages of records that were produced by NIST and FEMA to David in response to his request. So that itself was a bit of a victory, but in going through those records, David noticed that the key records that would have been most enlightening on what happened with these buildings that collapsed, including some key drawings, key photographs, a key video, some CDs that we know existed that had a lot of data on them, that none of those key records were given to us even after we sued them and after the release of about the 3,700 pages.
Of course.
And so we pressed for those records and asked for explanations. You know, how could these records be missing and what they produced? Because these records actually had been referred to in either FEMA's own report or in other public documents that we have. So we know they existed. We can prove they existed. So the litigation proceeded on the issue of the missing records. And we did what you might call dueling summary judgment motions, which is typical in FOIA cases. We got a favorable decision from the district court judge back in December, which denied the government's summary judgment motion and granted David Cole discovery to try to determine the extent to which FEMA and NIST failed to honor their statutory obligations to do a reasonable search for these records. And that development is unusual. Discovery is seldom granted in a FOIA case of any kind, and to my knowledge, has not been granted in a 9/11 case. The only exception would be the non-FOIA case with the family suing the Saudis, and some discovery has been or is being done in that case, and they've had a challenge even to get that limited discovery. So we intend to pursue our opportunity here to gather as much evidence as we can about what happened to these missing records and why FEMA couldn't find them in their search and why NIST didn't have them. If FEMA really gave NIST everything they had, NIST should have had these records too. And we have some indication that these records were given to NIST as well. So that discovery process is about to happen. It's actually an opportunity if some of your listeners would like to participate and contribute to this effort. And I'm not talking about money for a change, even though we're obviously happy to accept donations. What I'm talking about is in about 10 days from now or less, I'm going to submit our first round of written discovery requests, the goal of which is to find out how FEMA did their search, how NIST did its search, what the defects in their search procedures were that would have allowed these records to have been missed. And if anyone who has studied the building performance study or FEMA or NIST record keeping wants to, you know, send their suggestions to me on how we might frame a discovery question to these agencies, you know, I'll take your email and I'll read it carefully. And if it's a good idea, I'll use it. So with your permission, Sean, I want to give my email address. So that is my name, Mick Harrison, ESQ at gmail.com. That's M-I-C-K-H-A-R-R-I-S-O-N, esq@gmail.com. So you're welcome to give your thoughts on questions you might ask the agencies to get to the bottom of what happened in their search process that led to this failure. Now, we hope that this process will lead to not only more evidence of the inadequacy of the search by these two agencies and their violations of FOIA, which we've pretty much established to a certain extent already, but we hope it will show the need for a new search, and we hope that it will convince the federal court to give us an order requiring a new search. And of course, we hope that new search by these two agencies will lead to the location and production of the missing records.
This is a perfect time for a break, friends, and a quick message from our sponsor. So stocks are at all-time highs. The housing market is on fire. Interest rates are at zero. And this government just printed another $5 trillion. What could possibly go wrong? Meanwhile, consumer confidence hit a 10-year low, and inflation hit 6.8% officially, with many informed analysts saying it's much closer to 9%. So something's not adding up, is it? What can you do? You can play it safe. Putting some of your assets into precious metals will keep your money away from the volatility of markets and inflation and let you sleep at night. This month, Noble Gold is giving away a free 1/10 ounce solid gold American Eagle coin with any qualifying plan you start. So talk to an expert at Noble Gold, and they'll run you through the options to keep your money safe. No pressure, no hassling, no call centers, just a chance to speak to someone who knows what they're talking about. How refreshing would that be? You can start by calling 877-646-5347 or visit their website at noblegoldinvestments.com. Well, Mick, let me just interject and let's just take a look at history here and understand that over the past 20 years, one thing has become a lot more clear. Aspects of our government are criminal. Aspects of our government are part of the deep state, and the national security apparatus that will be in play here will be to cover up any records indicating that 9/11 was some sort of false flag operation, because the American people would lose their minds if they found out they were lied to about what happened on 9/11. And let me just take it a step further and say, 20 years ago, many of us didn't realize the FBI was so out of control. Well, now we see the FBI handling all sorts of patsies, whether it's in the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping case or on January 6th, where Ray Epps remains an unindicted co-conspirator. In my view, he appears to be an FBI agent working on behalf of the agency to incite violence on January 6th. That's just a sidebar, but let me also show you this. I want people to understand, since I mentioned nanothermites in World Trade Center 7. Well, why did I do that? NIST was tasked with explaining the destruction of that building. It took them 6, 7, 8 years to even come up with any sort of theory or paper. Kevin Ryan wrote this paper back in 2008, the top 10 connections between NIST and nanothermites. You can't make this up, friends. Talk about the fox guarding the chicken coop, which NIST never bothered looking at in terms of what could have brought World Trade Center 7 down at free fall speed at 5:20 in the afternoon on 9/11. I just wanted to share that with folks, Mick, because again, I think our government, many agencies within our government have been captured, and the possibility of them releasing smoking gun documents is probably quite thin.
Well, you know, I'm not as much of a pessimist on that as you are in the context of litigation. We do have some tools in federal legal procedures that give us a better chance of actually getting records from the government. I had an experience that you may know about litigating a whistleblower case related to 9/11 a few years ago, and it was an EPA senior scientist who had disclosed how dangerous the World Trade Center dust was to the first responders and right. the community. Mm-hmm. And she was fired, and we represented her and got her reinstated. Make a long story short, it was about a 7-8 year case, I think. And in the process, though, it became clear that EPA was trying to hide records from us. We had several orders from the judge compelling EPA to produce more records. And on the final day of the trial, while I was cross-examining the key agency decision maker, it became clear there were yet additional records that had not been given to us. The judge, discovering that, stopped the hearing, ordered the agency to produce those missing records and to make another search to see what else they might not have given us. And to make another long story short, after several more orders, I think it was about 900 pages of records were eventually produced after the trial had started that were being hidden from us. And we ended up winning that case in part because of that concealment of records that we uncovered. It's not an impossible task. And in this case, you know, I'm optimistic with the power of discovery. We're going to get at least closer to the bottom of what really happened with these searches. Now, this is not a case where we can do discovery on the actual, you know, demolition itself and the cover up. That case may be yet to come. But I think we're going to get more information and more records from this process. I will note on your unfortunately legitimate concern about FBI misconduct in relation to issues like this, that the Lawyers Committee did do a report to Congress last year or the year before, and a report to the U.S. Attorney in D.C. more recently last year regarding the anthrax attacks that followed on after the 9/11 attacks. A lot of folks may not know, who didn't live through it, that literally 2 weeks after the 9/11 attacks at the World Trade Center, the anthrax attacks started and were also a major motivating factor in convincing the public to support the war on terror and the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq. Turns out, upon our investigation, the FBI covered up key evidence of the source of the anthrax used in those attacks. Those attacks were initially and wrongfully blamed on Iraq and Al-Qaeda. Later, the government and the press had to admit that that was wrong and that the anthrax came from a U.S. military facility. And then the question is, which one and how, directly or indirectly?
Fort Detrick.
And that was a prime suspect, and it may not be the right suspect. That was the FBI's ultimate conclusion. And then they blamed the attacks on a single scientist there. And our investigation shows it's very likely that he was innocent and certainly could not have done those crimes by himself. And evidence pointed to two other facilities, one in Utah, one in Ohio. One is an Army facility. One is a government contractor facility. And the FBI had done a DNA analysis of samples of anthrax taken from a number of labs around the country, trying to find out which one might be closely related to the attack anthrax. They did find genetic connections to Fort Detrick, as you said, in Maryland, with some anthrax there. But that anthrax had been shared with other facilities. It was also available at the Ohio facility and at the Utah Army facility. And it turned out, based on our investigation, that the FBI adopted a procedure that essentially led to the Utah facility samples not being tested with the DNA analysis, even though the National Research Council issued a report saying it was virtually certain that the Army's facility in Utah would have had those, what we call the fingerprint morphs, in the attack anthrax. So long story, but point is the FBI does have some questions to answer regarding its conduct. If you got another minute or two, Sean, I can tell you about a couple other of our major projects going on.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. But let's just do this. I want to ask you something. Let's just have a conversation about naivete.
Yeah.
Do you agree with me that if you look back 20 years ago, I mean, I was just a younger man working for Target Corporation at the time, making commercials, enjoying my life, didn't know the world was what it is. I didn't understand the paradigms in which we actually live. Didn't understand the deep state, didn't know they existed, didn't know that our government was in many ways corrupt. Do you agree with me that if you look back 20 years, we were all very, very naive? And in this 20 years since, at least many Americans have woken up and are beginning to understand what we're talking about here? Because to me, that is part of the Great Awakening. And when I say we're reaching a tipping point, I mean that quite literally. I mean, if 65, 68% of Democrats don't trust Hillary and don't trust Biden, I think that's the good news. Were we naive 20 years ago?
Well, I think you're correct that there's been a process of eyes opening and people becoming more educated and enlightened on the details of government misconduct. And it isn't, in my view, restricted to a single administration or a single party. It's a sort of endemic problem with government, which is why I think public confidence in government has dropped. You know, Eisenhower might have been the last administration where there was a lot of confidence in government. I think with the Kennedy assassination, the process started of deterioration of public confidence. And it's not, the public isn't to blame for that. You know, the public has seen real evidence of government misconduct, which leads to a loss of confidence. Watergate was one example. You know, the Pentagon Papers. There were some earlier examples. We weren't completely naive back then. And certainly in the 70s, 60s and 70s, when I grew up, you know, there was a lot of resistance to the Vietnam War, which was not naivete. It was a legitimate, educated concern. So, but I do think you're right that we are becoming, I hope we're not jaded yet, but we're becoming more mature in our understanding of how much potential there is for corruption within the government.
Yeah, and I think that's why the powers that ought not be, they refer to themselves as a new world order, okay? George Bush Sr. used that term 220 plus times in public speeches when he was president. He was previously the head, the director of the CIA, George Bush Sr. His father was involved in an attempted coup of the US government back in the 1930s, the banker coup. That's all on the record. And people are beginning to wake up. It seems to me, Mick, that the American people have suffered for quite a long time from some sort of Stockholm syndrome, where we really love our country and therefore we love our government, even though we are abused by our government and deep state apparatus within our government. Again, I swear to you, the Great Awakening is happening, and that's why the New World Order is rushing its plan. The World Economic Forum, the Great Reset. That's why all of this stuff is happening, and it's only serving to wake up more people. My words, not yours. We don't have to go there with you. You're the lawyer, and I want you to stay on track and bring us up to speed on what else you're working on. But let me say one more thing. As it pertains to people, young people who don't know what happened on 9/11, I want people to explain to me how Jane Stanley, a reporter for the BBC, could have been reporting live from New York City with the backdrop of Ground Zero behind her. And she tells the host that details are sketchy, but it appears the Solomon Brothers building has just collapsed. Now, the Solomon Brothers building is standing behind Jane Stanley, and that's World Trade Center 7. And the satellite signal fades as Jane Stanley is reporting live from New York City, saying the Solomon Brothers building has collapsed while it stands behind her. And 10 minutes later, World Trade Center 7, the Solomon Brothers building, does indeed collapse at free fall speed. Now, Mick, I'm not a lawyer, but to me, that's evidence of a crime.
I was wondering what it felt like for you being in Manhattan. Well, unfortunately, I think we've lost the line with Jane Stanley.
I would have to agree with that. It has not been followed up on in the way that it should have. At least there's no evidence that law enforcement followed that up. Jane Stanley was psychic, and I don't think the people feeding her information to report was psychic. You know, someone fed her the text to read, and she read it, trusting that it was correct. She didn't look behind her and may not have known New York well enough to know that the building was still standing when she said it had already collapsed. But it indicates to me someone had foreknowledge that the building was going to collapse.
That's right. Let me just say, my friend, and, you know, as a guy who books interviews with people all over the world on a daily basis, it's very, very easy to get time zones mixed up. And I say that because the collapse of World Trade Center 7, when it did happen 10 minutes after that signal faded, was not broadcast live to the world. So if you're MI5, MI6, CIA, Mossad, who knows, whoever's feeding this information to reporters like Jane Stanley, it's quite possible that they got the time zone mixed up and they were an hour early and they believed the building had already collapsed. I mean, if you don't have boots on the ground there, I don't know. Maybe that's a stretch, but that's one thought.
Well, it is. And it should have been investigated thoroughly, and we should know the answer by now. And we don't. And there are a number of things we don't know the answer to that we should already know the answer to. We have thermite being found. Dust of the World Trade Center after the collapse. Kevin Ryan, who you mentioned, some of his colleagues, Neil Tarrant, published a report on the independent laboratory finding. And so that the government should have verified that by now. And to my knowledge, they have not. There are a lot of things. It's not just the evidence of what did happen that's important. It's the evidence of what has not happened that's important. And a lot of that evidence is what the government has not done to get to the bottom of this. And that's as important as, you know, what has been done.
Yeah, I very much agree. What hasn't been done is really important. And what hasn't been done is a legitimate actual investigation into why buildings 1, 2, and 7 collapsed in the way that they did. 1 and 2 collapsed in a different way than 7. 7 was more of a traditional implosion or demolition of a building as seen in Las Vegas and all around the world when they wire these, when they pre-wire these buildings with explosives and bring them down. Okay, bring us up to speed. I know you guys have that Lawyers Committee film series, 9/11 Crime Scene to Courtroom. I will try to remember to leave a link to that below. It looks like we're having problems with Mick's video. Mick, why don't you just turn off your video there and see if that helps us out. Okay, with all that said, what else is going on in the last 5 minutes we have together?
So we have an appeal that's about to be decided by the second highest court in the country, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in New York. This is the outgrowth of our petition to the U.S. Attorney in New York to give to the grand jury the evidence that we've been talking about. We haven't elaborated on it, but there's a lot of scientific evidence that, in our view, is dispositive about the use of explosives at the Trade Center on 9/11. We packaged all that evidence with a legal analysis, gave it to the U.S. attorney to give to the grand jury, as is the statutory duty of the U.S. attorney. They have a duty to give citizen reports of crimes to grand juries. Citizens may not be aware of that, but it's mandatory duty. So we exercised that right. We also exercised our right under the First Amendment to petition the grand jury directly. We did it through the U.S. attorney because of a federal statute that makes it a crime, unfortunately, these days, to communicate in writing with the grand jury directly. The U.S. attorney refused to deliver our petition to the grand jury. So we sued in federal court in New York. The federal court dismissed our case on 9/11 family members. We represented, I believe we had three there.
Mick, you cut out for a second. Back up. They dismissed your case. Why?
For lack of legal standing on the part of any of the plaintiffs. Our plaintiffs were 3 9/11 family members, 2 Ground Zero responders, architects and engineers, Lawyers Committee, and Richard Gage.
Mick, this is exactly what they did with the election fraud thing. They steal the election from Donald Trump, and then they don't let anybody sue. They don't let any evidence be shown because nobody has standing.
I tell you what, we would have, I think, a better country if we could subject all of our elections to more scrutiny. 100%. I think elections have been stolen in the past, and I think we need a new system that is essentially theft-proof for our elections. And I think citizens need to start designing one because I'm not sure the government's ever going to do it.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. All right. Well, continue.
Okay. So back to the Second Circuit appeal, the standing issue, is pretty much how you described it. It's not really, in our view, a good faith basis for dismissing the case. Keep in mind, we had a First Amendment claim, the right to petition. Most folks will remember in the First Amendment to petition your government. Everyone has it. We exercise that right. The law says that if a government entity obstructs your right to petition, you have legal standing to complain to a court about that obstruction of your constitutional right, which is part of what we were doing in this case. So at least our First Amendment claim should have had, you know, standing and should have been decided on its merits. And so we argued that recently. It was on, I won't remember the date now, 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe. We argued that case before the Second Circuit. I argued it through Zoom to the judges and on the panel, 3-judge panel. And we're now waiting to get that decision, which we hope to be made in a few weeks or a few months. We're cautiously optimistic, no way to guarantee what the court will do with it. But our position on the First Amendment standing is very strong. Once we get past that hurdle, which should never have existed, I don't know that there's any court of appeals in the country that has the duty on U.S. attorneys to give grand juries reports of federal crimes submitted by citizens. So we have a good chance of winning that case.
Well, that's very good news. And we'll wrap it up where we began when I mentioned the two key planks of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 inquiry. What do they want? Transparency and accountability. What do we all want when it comes to our government, when it comes to the FBI, the FDA, and yes, even the CIA? We want transparency and accountability, which ultimately would lead us to justice. What is one of the most important things in the world? If you want to have a country by and for the people, you need justice. Equal application of the law. Okay, these big guys, the deep-pocketed billionaires and the deep state should not be above or beyond the law. And that's why I'm very, very glad that Mick Harrison is one of the lawyers on the side of truth and on the side of people. Mick, I really do appreciate you very much. Do you have any final words for us? And tell people how they can follow you and follow this important story.
Well, thank you, Sean. Just that I appreciate your chatting with us today again. Folks who want to get involved or support us can go to our website, www.lcfor911.org, lcfor911.org. You can submit information. You can make a donation. You can ask questions. We're all in this together, so we appreciate your help.
Well, Mick, thank you very much. We appreciate you.
Okay. Thank you. Take care, Sean.
Take care. And friends, thank you so very much. A special thank you to our subscribe stars and our members at sgtreport.tv. Thank you so much for keeping us in the fight for truth and real news and for real news 24/7 for free. Visit us directly at sgtreport.com. That's the antidote to corporate propaganda. God bless you and your family. Bye-bye.
Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates, they outright say it, that these vaccines change who you are. And they change who you are by changing your genetic code.